Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
You know what I hate?
Was that?
The movie Watchmen.
It could be better.
I shouldn't even say hate. I just have no, like, there's nothing to this. Like, there was just, it looked nice at times. Mm-hmm. There was some, but it's like, I'm good. Like, I don't need this in my life. This movie has been done better.
Yeah, my first thought when rewatching this was the Frank Miller Sin City, the Robert Rodriguez Sin City, where it's like, I remember watching that movie in the theater and having read the comics a ton. At one point being like, I'm bored because I've seen this before. Because it was like one-to-one with the comics.
Yeah.
But in that case, that at least was this weird like extended tech demo of look at this weird shading I'm doing and all the CG and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This was like, what if I lifted the story directly and dialogue directly from the comic, tried to really repeat some of the same framings and stuff like that, the stylization from the comic, but do it worse. And yeah. make it more hollow and honestly, in a lot of cases, miss the point fucking completely.
I hope it missed the point. So I didn't I read the comic fucking years ago. So I do remember parts of it, but for the most part, it's, you know, the movie's far more clear in my memory. There are parts of the film that like didn't make sense. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure the comic made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can just hash it out as we go. But
Let me just give a brief overview, and then I want to find out specifically what didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, yeah, obviously The Watchmen was this, alongside The Dark Knight Returns, was this seminal piece in the 80s. It was like comics growing up. Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons. And it was the first one that ever really went, what if we put the superheroes in a real world setting? And it does so effectively that I'm surprised we're still doing it. It's considered one of the best pieces of comic book there is.
Graphic novel.
Yeah. But
what's up, nerd I talked to a couple weeks ago?
That's right. Then they made a movie out of it, and now they're making a TV show out of it. And
yeah.
Absolutely read the book before you listen to any of this, just because you should read the book and it's good.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. The thing is, I don't care about spoiling this movie, yeah. But that's a good point. I forgot. Some people may not have read the book. Yeah. Clean break. Definitely read the book if you're at all interested before you see the movie or listen to this. And anything you see involving a pirate ship, just flip the pages until it stops looking like a pirate ship and then keep reading because that shit was dumb.
I like it. I've grown to like it. I'll say that. Okay. I did that at the beginning too, but I've grown to like it. I think it adds a lot.
That was the only thing I liked about this version of the movie. That shit wasn't it. The TV show is not good. The TV show is actually better than it has any right to be, but it doesn't mean it's good.
I've heard the soundtrack is good.
The soundtrack is really interesting. Some of the acting is good. Mm-hmm. It looks really nice. Jeremy Irons is wonderful in it, as I was telling you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not needed. Yeah. It's not necessary. And it's not done particularly well.
What's unfortunate, and even though I know that it's based on the ending of the comic book and not the movie, is that I feel like people are going to watch this show and be like, whoa, Watchmen, huh? And then watch this movie. Instead of reading the comic.
This is true. And
which is unfortunate.
Because in the TV show, mild spoilers for the TV show, I'm pretty sure it was in the trailer, but they have like baby squid rain at one point, which the end of the actual comic book, instead of the end of this movie, they have a transdimensional squid land in New York and have basically a psychic explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the horrible instant instead of the one that's in this movie.
So what sort of things didn't make sense to you?
Okay, so that's one of them. So in the book,
mm-hmm.
the idea is, we are so close to nuclear Armageddon with Russia in this alternate 1985 that Ozymandias, which they pronounce his name very differently in this movie, but I'm going to continue to pronounce it the way that I like to refer to as correctly. And I don't even know if I'm correct, but that's what I've been saying since like high school when I read that fucking poem.
Yeah.
So in the book, the idea is that he invents this abstract threat from another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Unleashes it into New York, kills a whole shitload of people, and that makes the Americans and the Russians go, oh shit, you know, there's something much bigger than us out there that we need to kind of, it's basically we're teaming up, not teaming up, but like, you know, we're no longer in a Cold War because we know there's something greater,
right.
Humanity kind of, and this is kind of a trope of a lot of sci-fi that, mm-hmm. you know, governments would fake an alien invasion to try to get the world government in place. So I think that reads in the comic book pretty well. In this, I feel like the blame, and maybe I missed, I was so bored by the end of this, and maybe I just missed it. The idea is that Ozymandias kind of positioned everyone to have it look like Dr. Manhattan exploded in New York.
And Russia and Paris and all these places simultaneously,
I don't think I understand why it would be why it'd be Dr. Manhattan doing it.
I mean, he is a supernatural being.
But he's something natural.
Yeah, but like he's we can't really understand him. There's even reference to like God exists and he's an American. And that somehow he's punishing us because we pushed him away or something. It doesn't, if you think about it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Because then also if he has destroyed everything, like if he has attacked these things, why would everyone be like, oh, hey, America, you like fostered this guy. We're cool with you now.
That's,
you
know what I mean?
Like it doesn't really track.
Yeah, because he was America's fighter. And then like that would be like Russia, like, oh, yeah, well, you got a city blown up too. By your own guy, Eddie killed Moscow. It's like, it doesn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I'm glad you sort of agree with me here because it's like, did I miss something?
No, I remember when I first saw it kind of being like, yeah, that was okay, but I was just excited that they made a comic book movie. Remember that feeling?
Yeah, see, that's, this movie loses a lot in the intervening years. One is better comic book movies have come out and a million comic book movies have come out. But two, a lot of the like, kind of novel things have been done in it on a more like a macroscopic, microscopic level have been done better. Like some of the fight choreography is really crisp and cool, and but has been done better since then.
But I say I don't think it should exist in this movie.
No, it doesn't work as a film. Problem. But at least, like, if I were watching this and going like, well, at least I could hang my hat on. There's something cool to look at. But it's like it doesn't fit in the movie, and also doesn't age well.
Yeah.
The CGI aged like dog shit.
It's not very great.
Ozymandias may have the worst wig in the history of filmmaking.
Mm.
The lady that plays Silk Spectre is up there. I'm not saying
young
Tom
Silk Spectre.
Young, yes, young Silk Spectre.
Malin Ackerman.
I'm not saying she's Tommy Wiseau bad, but she is not good at acting.
She's not good. I've seen her in other things. Be okay.
Yeah,
like, she's not. She's nothing amazing, but I've seen her be okay. She's not great in this.
She's. I would say bad in this.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies that normally I could do the Natalie Portman thing where it's like, you know, look, you're in fucking episode one.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do? And there's a little bit of that in this, but she does not bring anything to the role. While some other people like elevated enough that you kind of forget you're watching something stupid.
Right. Yeah.
But there's some, just because I'm shitting on the actor, Ozymandias is miscast and not very good.
He's awful. And like for a character that's supposed to be, Ozymandias in the book is supposed to be like charming and whatever, so it's a little bit more of a shock when he does things. In the movie, he's just seems bad from the get-go.
Yeah.
And they also did this, I mean, I understand when you're doing a movie, you compress a lot of things. When you're doing an adaptation, you compress a lot of things. Him being in charge of the watch of the I forget what they're called. They're not the Minutemen, but they're the crime busters. When the groups try to get together again to fight crime, and the comedian's like, ah, you suck. We're not going to do this. Instead of having it be Captain Metropolis, which it was in the comic.
Yeah.
I don't like that felt like a weird choice. They did all this stuff where they got rid of other characters, which I think lessened the feeling of a world existing. They spent a lot of time trying to focus on placing it in the time with either the soundtrack, which was just hammering you over the head in some places. And then like, look, there's Lee Iacocca. Look, there's Annie Leibovitz or whatever. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of
there's
like,
a lot of
really
like fake celebrity cameos and that were really unnecessary.
The Andy Warhol one was particularly stupid.
Yes. Yeah. Although I will say I really like one of the things I really like about this movie is I love those opening credits.
I was going to say, I think and it makes the rest of the movie worse is I think the first like 5 minutes of this movie is like almost perfect. Like that is amazingly erudite, like quick, smart, great way to introduce a world. Like it's done so efficiently and it's such a letdown as it goes.
Yeah.
What did you think about, cause I'm still kind of torn about him, the guy that plays young Owlman.
Patrick Wilson.
Patrick Wilson. Yeah.
Having just, when I saw it in the theater, I enjoyed it. I will also say, I think this is my first time seeing it outside of the theater. And when I saw it in the theater, there was a woman sitting behind me that anytime there was anything resembling something from the comic, which there is a lot, since it is like just a photocopy of it in a lot of ways, she would go like, like did this like weird little squeal to the point that everyone in the theater was yelling at her to shut up by the end of the movie. So that sucked. So this time I was able to focus on how much the movie sucks, which was great. Sure. But I like...
Which goes to your greater point, which you bring up like on a lot of these comic book movies, that women shouldn't read comic books.
Thank you.
Like
yes,
how you always go off on those 10-minute rants about this is a man's world.
Yeah. This is for dudes. Yeah. You can't understand. You couldn't possibly understand.
You need
guy punching.
Big dick-filled brains to understand this shit.
By the way, I'm Frank Miller. Having just read the comic, he's not that character. Like, he's too... The comic book character of Night Owl is so much more pathetic than what he is in this movie, because Zack Snyder can't have superheroes not be cool.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. I thought I remembered the comic book character being a little bit more... I mean, I guess pathetic is the right word for it. But this was like... I don't know if cool is the right word, but he's still like... I don't remember if
he's not schlubby enough.
Yeah,
for starters.
Because isn't there a scene of comic? Maybe it's the extended cut where like he can't fit back into the owl suit. Like he makes like a whole show of.
I think he's a little chubby. I mean, he's certainly chubbier.
I thought there was like a scene, and that's not there. And it's like,
well, like when he and Silk's Spectre kind of reunite, and they're like they walk down a dark alley for some reason, they're attacked. They kind of look at each Tear the Glass is like, here we go again, ready to fight, and he's got kind of this wry smile on his face. Where in the book, it's not that. That's what ignites their like, ooh, we're kind of back into this. But it's not this like I've been waiting for this. He's so much more like the, how he even gets into being a crime fighter is like he got left a whole bunch of money, and he ends up like you find in the sort of the supplemental materials, Hollis Mason, the previous Night Owl. In his book, talks about how someone contacted him and was like, I'm like making gadgets and I want to fight crime. Can I be you? Which is such like a nerd thing to do.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't have that same feel in the comics. He just seems like a guy.
Yeah. And in this one, he was just a little too like, he's got those like, I mean, I don't want to like body shame him, but he's got like dick sucking lips. Like he's too sexy.
Okay.
Like by far. For the character, it doesn't work. Like, I'm not saying he's miscast, but he's like missed like makeup to like he should be like punchy or whatever. Like, so just to go to like, I mean, the other side of this, I think Rorschach is perfect in this.
Rorschach is perfect. I do think the movie pulls back a little too hard on his reactionary stuff. I think it's still there, but it's like in the comic. I'm a little bit ashamed because I remember reading it the first time and being like, you know, thinking Rorschach's like the most interesting character and like has the best lines like that. And you read it now and you're like, this guy is just such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like everything is just like all women are whores and I hate minorities.
They
kind of pulled back on that a little bit.
It's still in the movie, but it's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not there enough because I remember that from the character. And the TV show leans on that. So in the TV show, like there's basically like white nationalists all wear Rorschach masks. Mm-hmm. Like it became like he was like the face of a movement. Yeah. Jackie O'Haley, slaughters it.
See, he gets who Rorschach is. I don't think Zack Snyder does, but he absolutely does.
Just actor-wise, like beyond his performance, just his face and his like, it's perfect for him.
Yeah.
While like the guy that, what's his name? Patrick Warburton. What's his name?
Patrick Wilson. We've watched like four movies with him.
I know. I just, he's one of those, he's
fairly bland.
Yeah.
I like him, but he's pretty bland.
Yeah. I just want him to be like. More like for this movie, he either needs to be more bland or like I don't know, hunkier. Like there's like he's got this like middle kind of like especially like I don't know. I think something about him doesn't work for me. And I think you lose a lot
with his character in the compression of a lot of things because they leave out a lot of his scenes. And
though I did like and as much as I think this movie has the worst sex scene that's ever been in film.
Maybe 300 is beats it, but like it's
oh, yeah,
it's,
yeah, good point. Yeah,
Zack Snyder, just don't do that.
But that I did like, and it's hammy and he doesn't pull it off. But I like the idea of he comes real quick the first time, but then when he gets kind of back in bat, like, oh, I'm Owl Man again, and he can fuck like a stallion. It's stupid, but I'm like, that would work for this movie.
That's what happens in the book, but is that basically these. Two freaks go, we can't function unless we're dressing up like and beating people up. And the shooting the fire thing happens in the comic too. But that it's much more, even though it is kind of ham-handed, it's much less a jizz metaphor as more just like an impotence, you know. Like, and I know those are kind of similar, but the fact that it happens at the moment of climax. In the book, you get that they start to kind of kiss, and then like you just see her elbow hit the button and whatever, but
see, I actually like the fire as jizz. if it like, but you have to divorce it from fucking Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah.
Yeah, that was again the soundtrack. Just, what are you doing?
That is a tremendously awful sex scene, and it is hard to do because that's an attractive man, and that lady is fucking stunning. That is a very nice looking woman. And how do you manage to have two attractive people smush their bodies together in an artistic way? And I'm like, wonder what's going on my phone. Yeah. I literally am checking my phone. Yeah. And I'm a big Leonard Cohen fan. Like, I own many of his albums. And so it's like Leonard Cohen, hot people smushing together in a superhero movie. This should be the greatest thing. And I'm like, you know, I probably have a Scrabble move I could make.
Why am I looking up Patrick Wilson nudes? He's right on the screen in front of me.
It's too busy looking up Jeffrey Dean Morgan nudes. Yeah. But I think he's the other with Rorschach, another one that I think hits it perfectly. I think he understands the tone of that character really well.
I do. The one time I don't like him is, like his performance, is when he's in Vietnam and he shoots the pregnant Vietnamese woman that has his baby. Because the comedian is just this awful nihilist.
Yeah, yeah.
And just a horrible, horrible person. And in fact, that's a thing. I don't remember, doubling back to Rorschach, I don't remember if this is in the movie or the comic book at this point. But in the comic, like Sally Jupiter is talking to Rorschach about, like, yeah, the comedian's a piece of shit. You know, he raped my mom. And he was like, well, you know, I'm not here to judge. He served our country. And kind of shit. Rorschach sucks. But
I think Rorschach makes a comment that, like, she deserved it by the way she dresses or something like that. It was something along those lines.
But, so Rorschach's black and white morality is garbage, but
I think that's why it makes it an interesting thing to watch.
Absolutely. When they're in Vietnam and Dr. Manhattan is like, hey, don't shoot that lady, and he shoots the lady, and he's like, yeah, you could have stopped me at any time. You could have turned the gun into vapor. You could have.
Yeah.
He just says it, and I think the idea is that he's like that. This doesn't mean anything to him, but I always, maybe it's just one of those having read the book a lot of times.
Yeah.
It just felt like it should have been more sneering, I guess.
Oh, see,
but it's just kind of like. Yeah, well, this is a thing that happened.
I didn't like the shooting, but I liked his delivery of, like, you could have turned it to steam. Like, I like that, like, the kind of the weariness he had, and also the annoyance that, like, you know, you're there, like, not that it's on screen, but, like, you know, I think as like him building his character background or whatever, like, you have to be so annoyed that you even have to fight that, like, you have God on your team. You shouldn't even have to take a flight.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be in Vietnam at all.
I also don't like that after he gets stabbed in the face by the pregnant woman in Vietnam, he starts wearing this like leather daddy mask in the comic, and they didn't include that.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
When he's fighting the protesters.
Yeah.
And that was kind of this is a perfect example of Zack Snyder fucking this up. Like, it's this slow motion of him jumping off the owl ship. Yeah. And looking all awesome when he lands. And it's like, no, he's a piece of shit that's going to go just shoot protesters.
What I did notice about this, though, is this is the exact – we can timeline this. 2009 is the – about – we're about halfway to the superhero landing.
Because
they don't do full superhero landing in this. They don't do the fist on the ground full, like Deadpool makes fun of superhero landing.
Right.
They go like halfway. Like Silk Spectre almost does one. He sort of does one. But like, I think like next year that becomes in every movie. It's like as like a historical.
Well, Iron Man came out in 2008. And I think he was the one that started that, I feel like.
Yeah, but that's like a comic book. Like that's in the comic book kind of a pose.
Oh,
like
okay.
I think on the cover of the Extremist books, I think that actually is his pose on it. I am a fucking nerd, but no, but it being like every single movie, and you can see this movie kind of like is like the median point where we're about to turn into every movie does that fucking pose,
which is again like it's and maybe it's a part of this movie going so badly, or it wouldn't be the first time Hollywood took the wrong lessons from something. The fact that that we did a run of no superheroes, gritty real life. When this movie is like, it would be bad if superheroes were in real life.
Yeah, and that's – so here's the other – sorry. I didn't mean
to – No, that was it. Just like it's just like
– So that's part of the other thing I don't understand about this. Not that I don't understand, but I don't think tracks – it's probably not my not understanding. But like this movie doesn't show superheroes being bad.
Yes.
Like it's like, they're extreme. They don't – like it's not pleasant. But they seem effective. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. He can't have superheroes not be cool.
Yeah. And it's one of those, it's like almost, it would almost be interesting to see it played that way. It's almost like when you see like war movies that are portrayed as like what actual war is like, you're like, oh, this is gross and like terrible. But it's, you know, and I don't agree with this statement, but like as far as like the view of the world, it's necessary to have war. So like you kind of deal with it. And like this movie almost takes it like that, where it's like, well, it's necessary for these superheroes to be around because they're like doing good. And it's just like, I don't think, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but I don't think he got it. Like,
no,
I don't think
he 100% didn't. And I think, you know, some of that, I don't know where if it's like at the script level or whatever, but the way that these characters are treated, not just like visually, like one huge thing that drives me nuts is part of the thing of the book is that Dr. Manhattan shows up and he's the first person with real superpowers.
Yeah.
Every other person is like, has these crazy leaps and is punching people through walls. This like that doesn't work.
This is irritating. And I wanted to ask you about that. That was one of the other things that didn't, who threw comedian through the window?
Ozymandias.
Was that, but I mean, that was in this movie, that is Ozymandias.
Yes.
So Ozymandias has superpowers.
Yes, basically, like all the fighting is so hyper, and in fact, he kind of does in the comics. Like his whole thing is that he's, you know, he's brilliant and he's perfect and he's been almost like Batman in a way where he's like Ozymandias and Batman are kind of two or and Rorschach are like two halves of Batman basically, because Ozymandias has all the like, oh, I'm super smart and I've trained with Buddhist monks and all this stuff and I can catch a bullet if I need to because I'm so great physically. Like, Rorschach is just like the, I'm a lunatic.
He's the perfect example of vanity.
So it makes some sense in terms of just like judo strength throwing a guy.
But that's the thing.
But way it works in the movie is just ridiculous.
Yeah, but in the movie, they actually make a point of saying you could drive a car into that window and it wouldn't crack or whatever. Like, I forget what the line is, but so it's like, so he's superpower too? Because I can kind of, I can write off a little bit of the feats of strength that happen with the other people, mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, you know, your knees would buckle if you'd made that drop, but whatever, it's mm-hmm. a movie. Like, you know, I can kind of, but that specific spot is, there's two things that doesn't make sense there. One, Ozymandias wouldn't go there in person to kill him. That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, he does.
No, but why?
Because first of all, you want a, he already knows what's up.
Yeah.
So, like, why would you not send?
Because other people could see you. I mean,
yeah,
like,
but other just, people, I mean, that's why he's wearing the separate.
No, I
like,
guess.
It doesn't.
It just doesn't rhyme with, like, this world's smartest. Like, just send, like, eight guys or send one missile. Like, it's not.
Yeah, I mean.
Just the risk factor. Even if it's 1% risk for a very smart man, the world's smartest man, you wouldn't risk 1%
well,
just to kill some asshole from the 40s.
He's probably all figured it out because this was a thing that also.
Oh, that's
and I
right.
could be I could be wrong remembering this, but, like, in the comics, I think they highlighted this more in the movie, is that his whole plan is done because he's plotted out. Based on all this shit, this is going to happen. Like, this Armageddon is absolutely going to happen. Because there's a part in the book where he sits down in front of TV screens. And this is how he makes his decisions. These, like, this grid of TV screens, which you see him do a little bit, where he's like, oh, like, this image and this image and this image means that war is coming because more eroticism is happening in commercials. What we should do is invest in this, 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 and this. So he's like, he's interpreting all this data, making stuff happen. And in the book, I feel like his... It left it more up to you to go like, well, it's his prediction whether or not this is right. In the movie, they go all the way up to DEFCON 1.
Yeah.
I know they go up to DEFCON 2 in the book, and Nixon's like, we're going to just sit here and wait and see what happens. But in the movie, it seems like it's much more of a foregone conclusion. And this is the only thing that's going to stop it. Whereas you can argue maybe it wouldn't, maybe it would in the comic.
Yeah, no, I remember that from the comic that he was like predictability is mm-hmm. like the like this it's so awe-inspiring, amazing, that's what it is. And you're kind of, and the kind of ego of him taking it for granted, and that's why killing all those people is kind of the morality piece of the comic of like who watches the Watchmen. Like this person feels so imbued in powers because he's a superhero, used to be one, that he feels like, yeah, I can kill millions of people because I know so much. This, you know, like, and that's,
well, it's also like the comedian gives him that idea when they the crime busters get together. The comedian's like, you guys think that doing this piddly little shit is making any kind of difference, whatever, because superheroes are in the real world, they're involved with politics and like the crazy shit that happens in global empire building and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That, yeah, like, you know, back in like the 40s when Superman's punching a bank robber, it's like, that, what does that do? What does that stop anything? And so Ozymandias makes a choice.
Yeah, it's so, it doesn't work in the movie. I remember liking the comic. So some other things are weird. Night Owl visiting old Night Owl
mm-hmm.
in this movie doesn't do anything. It's just kind of like it's there because it was in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, it's there's so much more in the book that's like nostalgia plays such a huge thing throughout. Adrian Veidt also has a perfume called Nostalgia that you'll see ads for everywhere in the book. And I think they appear in the movie too. But
spoiler alert for the TV show, they're a pill that you can take in the TV show to remember things. Yeah,
this show sounds real fucking stupid.
I want you to watch it just so you can be angry. No, I don't actually want you to watch it, but like, I mean,
I'll wait till the first season's done, and then I might check it out if people still think it's good. But god damn, everything I hear about it is just, and I also just don't like Damon Lindelof's mystery box bullshit.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Anyway, that sort of connection to the past is much more of a thing in the comic, and what sort of happens to Hollis and his role in some things is a little bit more meaningful. Where in this, it's just like, look at this guy. He's friends with old people.
All right. So here's,
and no, I don't want to watch the director's cut. I'm not going to watch the director's cut.
I won't. I'm going to put this, I've never said this on the show before, cause I don't talk about, money that often, and we don't have enough listeners to do this. It would take $1,000 of Patreon for me to sit through that movie. Now I'm not putting that either. Like, I think that's even a remote possibility, but like, that's the kind of like, oh my fucking God, do I not want to watch that? Like, it would take it would take a paycheck, embarrassingly enough, that basically it's a paycheck, to have me sit through the fucking director's, because this movie is a million years long.
If you could make a cogent argument that, because all the stuff that we're outlining here, you can't remove that from the whether or not it's the director's cut or not.
Yeah.
If you can make a cogent argument, the director's cut is better and does service the comic better, I'll listen to you and maybe. But as it stands right now, I can't imagine that Zack Snyder, that like left to his own devices, is like, no, I actually get it. I'm good. Yeah, based on every other stupid thing he's done.
There's nothing that, I mean, I'd say for a money that involves a comma, I cannot tell you how much I didn't enjoy watching this movie. Yeah. And not even like a, so I wanted to say, like, I don't even give it the respect enough to hate this.
Yeah.
It's just pointless. And I know some of it is aging, but the movie aging, like, it just didn't age. Like, it was annoying to watch. Like, I wound up, like, so much didn't want to watch it. Like, my whole body was just like, oh, I don't want to watch this so much.
Yeah. I have felt like that during several movies, which shall not be named.
Wait, no, but that's fine. But yeah, but you have shit tasted movies. I'm usually like,
you're smart. And,
yes, yeah. I'm smart and brilliant. And this has got the word book in it. It's supposed to be for me.
That's true.
Oh, fuck.
They can't all be Sicilian vampire.
All right, wait. Here's the other thing about this fucking movie. And I guess, so there's a million things I hate, but like, if this is in the comic, maybe it works better in the comic, but that one guy getting his cape stuck in a revolving door, and that's how he gets shot. If that's in the comic, fine, but it does not work in this movie. That is fucking stupid.
Oh, it's, yeah. But I mean, like, it I think that's the point, the thing is in the comics, like, so he was hired by that bank. This was a superhero made by a bank to like represent them, and like the fact that he gets caught in the revolving door with a cape.
I'm there for that, but not for the way they did this.
Well, much in the same way that like I don't like, as much as I do like that opening, the part where they're carting the moth guy off to the insane asylum and he's still wearing the moth thing. That happens in the book because he becomes after everyone breaks up, and then in the Minutemen break up, he becomes this tremendous alcoholic and like basically just drinks himself to insanity.
Yeah.
I don't think he's still wearing the costume, but like, fine. I mean, for the purposes of the opening, fine, whatever. But it was, again, I think I had the same reaction to that you did to the.
Yeah. The other part I didn't like, well, there's two other, well, let's start with the dumb one, and then I'll go to the one that may be like politically more sensitive. Comedian killing Kennedy is, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, that's right on. Because like that he doesn't specifically happen in the book, but he makes a joke about like, just don't ask me where I was with JFK. What I've heard about JFK. Because like the dude's like a CIA spook. In the comics, he has personally prevented Watergate from being like unveiled. Like he's essentially being celebrated for murdering Woodward and Bernstein. And that's the thing they don't do a great job of in the movie, is that he becomes a government tool, but he's like the worst parts of America. He's America, basically.
I'd be fine with that if that were in the movie. That scene just being in this is just sits.
Well, it's shorthand for a thing they don't really pay off.
Yeah,
well,
like if I had read the comic book, that makes zero sense. It's not like a particular, like, I mean, I sort of remember that in the book, but not that much. But like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, watching, well,
this as a film. Which
yeah,
is what
they don't give him enough lead up, because like it's you get some and it's tough to do. There is like, this is a dense tome. There's a lot in there, but where he, after he leaves the group, he goes and fights, and he wants to fight in Europe when the group is forming in like 1939. Then like he leaves and becomes like a war hero doing heinous stuff overseas. Yeah. And so like, yeah, gets really involved with basically being a CIA spook.
But I guess for this movie, we don't need to see him kill Kennedy. His character has nothing, like his character doesn't, that's too big of a thing for a character that's not big in this movie.
I disagree.
I mean, speaking in the movie, but like his, so Dr. Manhattan is the big guy in the film, right?
Yeah.
The comedian should be just like a sociopath kind of rapist shitbag.
Yeah, and he is.
Yeah, but so him killing Kennedy just feels too big. It'd be like it would be as if Night Owl. I'm not going that way. I was gonna say Night Owl flew the fucking planes into the towers. but like, no, but actually, kind of like that, where it's like that's too big for that character. It just feels, and in the movie, not in the comic, because
I think in that opening montage, it is showing you directly, like, because it's these characters and these superheroes having a direct effect on reality that they're taking place. And that's why, you know, look, Ozymandias is at fucking Studio 54 or whatever. That is, it's trying to tell you that, it's trying to place the comedian. And like, that he was the shooter on the grassy knoll. But I don't think they pay that off well enough.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me. Yeah.
See, because like, again, if they like did enough to push it forward to be like, yeah, and he personally stopped the Watergate thing from happening. It would fit in a little bit better.
Yeah, I'd have less of an issue with it. Yeah. The other thing that bothers me, and this is purely directorial, is they show Goffy McGillicuddy, I don't know her name, but like leaning over and doing the kissing, the sailor kissing.
Oh, the silhouette, yeah.
The silhouette. So it's a lesbian kiss. But the thing is, they set up this opening montage of they're changing the world.
Uh-huh.
So that should be shorthand for LGBTQ whatever is accepted earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she gets killed for being a lesbian.
Right.
Well, now, I'm not saying that doesn't make sense, but the movie shorthand is setting it up one way and then paying off a different way. And this movie,
well,
the language of this movie doesn't work to allow that.
Well, that's absolutely true. Because I think, again, with this, in the context of the, and I think you see it in the movie, but Hollis Mason, the first Night Owl, wrote this book called Under the Hood. And it's about sort of a history of the superhero, his time as a superhero, and it reveals some things about some of the other heroes.
Yeah, that's shown in the movie a couple times.
Yeah, but like, Silhouette is a lesbian and ends up getting killed by an old enemy. It's like an open secret, I think, among them, but it's not like doing that shit in public would not be a thing you would do. It's because like this is a reactionary time period. Like,
and especially
it's a weird thing. It seems like it's Zack Snyder's trying to be salacious and it's not, it doesn't work for
me. It doesn't work at all. I mean, but the thing is, it's such a famous image of like the sailor dipping in their, like, I mean, that's a hugely famous. Mm-hmm. So like if they're setting that, it sets up something that doesn't,
Stealing from that image, but adding nothing to it. It doesn't fit in the world.
Yeah, and also takes away from the message of, like, if you're saying this opening is setting up the world that superheroes exist, that also sets up a world where lesbianism is okay in the 1940s.
Right.
And then
you can see people in the background, like, frowning about it, but I still don't think...
Yeah, no, it doesn't... You know what I mean? It doesn't work the way it is. Here's something I did love, though, and I hope you didn't know about this, because this made me feel so smart. The Good Luck, Mr. Gorski...
I don't know that.
Oh, thank God, because I was going to be so annoyed if you knew this. It's an apocryphal story, pre-Snopes, that when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, one of the things he said was, "Good luck, Mr. Gorski." Now, this comes from Neil Armstrong was in the backyard of his house when he was about 7 years old, and he heard through the window the couple next door going, "Blowjob, I'll give you a blowjob when that kid next door walks on the moon." And that was the Gorski family.
Oh, my God.
But this was like an urban legend for decades, like decades upon decades. So, but in this movie, you hear him go, "Good luck, Mr. Gorski."
Okay, because I kind of wondered what he said, but I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah. And it's what my, I love that used to be like this thing. And the fact that, I hope that was Zack Snyder's idea, because I don't want to give him any credit.
Yeah.
Or whatever writer came up with that. But I was like, oh, that's so fun, because it's such a dumb, it's like that Richard Gere the one that
choked with the hamster?
Oh, he's the hamster. Who's the guy that like had so much... comment
Rod
on that.
Stewart.
Rod, it's like one of those kind of, I mean, not as salacious, but like it's
absurd. Yeah. Certainly.
Not as Jabba's friend.
But. Yeah. Yeah. I just think that, I think the movie with again, kind of camping out some of the political stuff about it misses a lot of things. And I think some of that's the compression, is like, it doesn't give these chance of characters to breathe and really, really be what they really are.
But, yeah, but they also miss the kind of – so one of the notes I have here, and this is a good example of like how they miss the characters. It's they need to either choose – so like with, we were talking about Night Owl. You either choose him being geeky or him being a superhero, or like being, you know, muscly punch guy's thing. In the time given, you either
or like, yeah, have him make that journey a little bit better.
Yeah, or cut character. Like, it just, you can't, there's too much material. You try to get everything, doesn't work. So, we have a scene which is like doing the 909s and laugh balloons. Yeah. Everything is super fun. And it's Night Owl and Silk Spectre talking about that guy that used to get off on getting beaten up.
Yes.
Wonderful scene until he goes, well, what happened? Well, he tried doing it with Rorschach and Rorschach threw him down an elevator shaft.
Yeah.
That doesn't work with these characters.
Well, they
with the way they want to play, because that's like fun murder, and that it's like with the alley scene where they're like rampant murderers. It doesn't work with the that works. That would be like the comic book version of this, but that's not what they're showing in this movie.
Well, yeah, it's the thing. The thing is like that 100%. That like is again the thing that happens in the book, but like it's much more. Like stark and depressing when they're like, cause they're like laughing at them. They're like, oh boy, we should be laughing. But you kind of get a sense of like, that's who these people are, that they think that shit's funny. And in the way the movie kind of does it, it brings you in on the joke. No, but I just think that, that it doesn't have that ironic like separation or whatever, like that, that distance to make you go like, oh my God.
And it doesn't work for these characters because they're trying to play off that they're damaged psychopaths in costumes, but also totally functional people that can laugh about it. But also they're laughing about something like they're trying to play both sides and it doesn't land. Cause also we don't have like Night Owl and Silk Spectre kind of need to be proxy heroes. Like at least the
kind of,
impetus heroes to have this movie work. And Silk Spectre sort of does, but by the end, Night Owl, like, he should just be killed by Ozzy. Like, he's just as dirty and all, like,
it doesn't... Well, like, Night Owl in they kind of mess it up a little bit in that Night Owl at the end, when they're confronted with Adrian's plan, with Ozymandias' plan, he and Silk Spectre kind of just, like, fuck off. Like, they know this is happening, and they're like, we are powerless to do this.
Yeah.
They, like, run away. Go have sex somewhere, basically, because they're just like, this is okay. Like we're throwing in the towel on this whole thing because, like, this is so much bigger than we can even deal with. Whereas he's still running around and like watches Dr. Manhattan fry up Ozymandias, or I'm sorry, fry up Rorschach.
Yeah,
he's like, no, and it just doesn't. His complicity is stronger in this one than in the other one, where he's just like, all right, that's happening. I'm just gonna walk away.
Yeah,
where it seems more active in this, and I don't know how much I like that.
Yeah, I actually the Dr. Manhattan stuff in this bothers me. On this is like kind of my main gripe with the film, and even if this were better, I still would dislike the film. But this is the one that like really set me over the edge. Is, you know, kind of the end of it is, well, what I didn't realize was that the miracle was you.
To see, like, it's
that is
it's done poorly, garbage. But I like that idea because this is a dude that's just excited by, you know, the atomic structure of things.
But he remembers being a human. Everybody's had that thought of the they call it the miracle of life. That's fucking third grade science.
Right, but it's also because he's been so distanced from all that. Like, he's
fine, but
yeah, but like it doesn't read as corny, I think, in the original comic.
Because in this movie, it reads as corny. It's so fucking,
because
stupid.
It's also he doesn't feed her that information. Like, he doesn't like touch her head and she remembers it.
Yeah.
She is remembering all this stuff and he tells her like, I think you're hiding something, and she kind of puts it together herself. Which fine either way. I mean, I think it kind of takes away agency from her, but whatever. But I think having him kind of go like, oh, well, I'm interested in these weird, like he's talking about Mars being this, like all this stuff happening without life being there, but that the chaos of life can still be kind of interesting. It's, but then kind of what follows from that, him immediately kind of being like, oh, you kill a bunch of people? Eh, well. And then leaving kind of belies that. And I sort of like that. And I like, actually, I really like Billy Crudup in this as Dr. Manhattan. He has that.
He's good. Yeah.
He's that, the whole I'm like distant, but also condescending voice that he has is great. And I begrudgingly really like his whole creation story.
Oh, no, I think that's well done.
Yeah, I only say begrudging because they're using the song, they're using music from Koyaanisqatsi, which is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, okay. And I was like, I like the actor that plays his other scientist friend.
The guy that plays Wally Weaver?
Yeah. He's great. He's one of those character actors that's been in everything. Mm-hmm. But the Manhattan stuff, I thought Billy Crudup did a good job at it. It's just the CGI does not age well.
Mm.
And, I mean, we just can't be John and Alex to hate stuff without talking about that dick that dick's pretty distracting.
See, I guess I was expecting it. I wasn't like, ooh, what are they going to do about this? So I was ready for some dick. That's all I'm saying.
It's more, I think the thing that really distracted me about it is one, it's a good dick. And I was like, man, I'm jealous of that. I wish I had a dick like that. But then two, He had a fur bikini on for a little while, and that made it worse that he was naked. Like, he was naked the whole time, but the fact that for a while he had a fur bikini.
Oh, yeah. No, they try to put him in a whole costume, and, like, he gradually just takes it all off.
I guess it's just one of those kind of compression things where it's like.
Yeah.
The nudity, it's not that it bothered me, but, like, I think I would have noticed it less if there was. If it's just, I'm in a full suit, fine. When I'm not in a full suit, I'm totally nude.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. But that fur bikini for a little bit, like, just that. So it just made me think, like.
It's just a black bikini thing. It's not fur.
I thought it was fur.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, it looked furry.
I like that idea that he's.
Oh, well, either way, it's fucking, it's irritating.
I just want to see that dong.
I mean, it's not even like I don't care about his dick being like shown or not. It's just I don't know.
I will say,
a taboo against male nudity in our country or our part of the world, and there being like it being covered and it being not covered. I just think like that should be a psychological movement from his distance from humanity where he stops caring.
Yeah, and I hate to just going.
No, I'm sure it's
like,
in the book.
Yeah, because he just talks about like, oh, I've agreed that I don't have to wear my whole costume, and but as it progresses. But I will say kudos to Zack Snyder for just like going with it though, for being like, no, I'm going to show blue dick and I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. It's just going to be there. And,
it's fine. I just, it's just another, like a series of tiny little things that add up together to be like, if you just cut all this or chose a consistent tone, I think you would have told a more coherent story. And the CGI doesn't hold up. I mean, that's like
an amazing. Yeah, there's very little you can do about that. You know?
It's just the glow is just so off-putting. Oh, here, okay, totally changing. Well, not totally changing, but like, because we're in this spot of the movie, I'm just kind of looking at my notes here. Why does that one guy have elf ears? Moloch,
it's never really explained, but he does. Okay. I mean, he does in the comic, and I guess maybe just because the comic doesn't seem like as bad, because he was their one supervillain. They don't do a good job explaining this. Or I don't know the one, but he was a big supervillain. But like as he kind of retired, they kind of lost interest, and like all these criminals just started doing more just less goofy ass crimes and more like money laundering.
Yeah,
you know. And so it was like, oh, okay.
What's interesting about him as a character? So you're familiar with Bohemian Grove in California?
Yeah.
That giant owl statue they worship is Moloch,
right?
Which this cannot be expected of this movie, but maybe there's subtext in the comic of like. I mean, there is a kind of strata issue of, like, the haves and the have-nots in the Watchmen universe of, like, the supervillain being Moloch is an interesting kind of, it's an interesting name to choose.
Because
this is Alan Moore, right?
Yeah, it's Alan Moore.
And Alan Moore is well occultist.
He's
so, like,
very
he knew what he was choosing when he said Moloch.
Yeah. So, and I like, it's always nice to see Matt Frewer. I love that actor a lot.
Now, I get him confused with, he's not Zefram Cochrane from Star Trek, right? The guy that invented the warp drive in First Contact.
I don't think so. He's in Next Generation. Claims to be a time traveler.
Oh, he's time traveler guy. Yeah. Okay, I get those two guys confused. Okay, yeah. Zefram Cochrane is the guy that's also on 6 Feet Under. They have very similar faces.
Ah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Richard Jenkins?
Nah, I don't care. Yeah. I mean, I do, but I'm never going to remember it, and I don't feel like looking things up right now. The other thing I think it makes sense, but I think they should have either. I don't like the cancer storyline with Jenny and the other scientists, where like he tricks Manhattan into leaving the planet by something about it. Like, I mean, I don't have a pitch for it, but I feel like that could have been done a little less circuitously. Like, that feels like a long ball to throw.
I don't know if his initial was his plan was to completely make him leave the planet entirely.
Yeah.
But I think it was to turn popular opinion against him, that like being around him is bad and don't associate with this guy.
Oh, okay.
Because the Janie confrontation, the like surprise Jerry Springer confrontation thing was a thing they added for the movie versus him just finding out about it.
Yeah.
And being pissed at the leader. Also, he does in the comic, he makes everyone else go away. He disappears everybody else from the studio.
Yeah.
And then disappears himself and goes to where his accident happened to grab the photo and then goes to Mars.
Well, in the book, didn't he actually give her cancer?
No. He's never given anybody cancer.
Oh, I thought I haven't read the book for a while. I thought the book he actually was giving off some kind of toxic stuff.
This has been in motion for a long time.
Because
that's why Jupiter doesn't have cancer and all this stuff. But yeah, it was more of a way just to neutralize him. I don't know if this specific like, oh, I know he's going to leave the planet entirely.
Yeah, I think I think it's this compression thing. Most of this movie doesn't like ring true to me because it's just done in a, which is weird for such a slowly paced movie. It's done in a blistering pace. Like how much shit they're trying to.
Yeah, they get a lot of stuff in there. I think some of it is just tonally, like I said, like they can't make superheroes not cool. So some of that stuff doesn't read as well. It doesn't have that distance that I think it needs to have.
I have a Rorschach note here that I was curious that I marked down of your opinion on. I'm not locked in here with you, you're locked in here with me thing. What do you think about that?
Oh, he's an insane person. Yeah. I mean, like, it's again, that's right from the comic.
Let me reword that. What do you think about the people that are going to react to that thinking that he's a fucking hardcore badass?
Oh, yes. Yeah. The same people that do think he's a hardcore badass. Like, yeah.
Because as it got worded, and I hadn't watched the TV show yet, but it felt very like, oh, I can't imagine there's any of them in our audience, so I'm not going to annoy them. It felt like people in MAGA hats would be like, yeah. That guy's awesome. He's going to, and it's like, oh, you're missing the.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely.
He's an insane person.
I mean, like, when me in my 20s, when I read this thing, or like, you know, 1920, like, I was like, man, what a badass, you know?
Yeah.
Like, on its face, he's exactly a comic book character that people think is awesome. And then you start getting in. And I like that he is a derelict weirdo because you can't live a life and then turn into that.
They did it well with Rorschach in this movie where his Rorschach journal stuff, which they don't lean on too heavily in this, but he's like, I'm the only one that didn't turn into a complete psychopath or whatever. Yeah. Like, and it's a little heavy handed, but I think it lands really well, especially because it's shortly before he goes to jail and he's like, give me my face back.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, oh, that's actually like a nice bit of plotting. Like Jekyll Earl Haley does a great job, but I think part of it is like, I think he's one of the few characters that's actually like handled well. And
They got rid of this, which I don't like. So after he, at the beginning, when he goes to he starts, you know, pursuing his mask killer theory, he goes to visit Dan Rodberg. And then in the book, Rorschach breaks into Ozymandias's office and they have a whole conversation. They eschew that for Ozymandias talking to Night Owl and Rorschach, because it's nice in both, that it gives Rorschach, like he starts talking about shit and starts talking about like the comedian being great. And Ozymandias is like, no, this guy's a piece of shit. He's like, he served his country. If you think he's a Nazi, you might as well call me a Nazi. And Ozymandias is like, huh.
Yeah.
But also there's a line where Adrian Veidt, part of the reason Adrian Veidt has all this money is he's also licensed himself and has like this toy line of Ozymandias stuff.
Oh yeah, they did a little bit of that in the movie.
Well, but see, he in the comic, he's like, you fucking sold out and you're just merchandising all this shit. You're a prostitute, and they don't have that. Instead, they have Night Owl go like, oh, look at all these little figures. That's fun. You should buy these kids.
Yeah.
You know, and because God forbid, a movie studio is not going to be like, yeah, we should make fun of merchandising.
Yeah, this is true, which we should, again, blame George Lucas for that because he
ruined it. Well, I thought you were going to say we should start our own merchandise, and I agree.
Oh, we should. I mean, there's John Alex 8 Stuff stickers. All you have to do is email me, and I'll send you one. And
John Alex Stuff fart machines.
That's it. There used to be AlexCast shirts. I actually think you could still buy them on Amazon.
Oh, yeah?
So if anybody wants to buy an AlexCast shirt, I think I sold four, so.
I'd buy one, but I just don't wear shirts. I just rip through them with this strong torso.
I think you just misspoke the word. Yeah, I'm not going to forget it. In the compression thing we've been talking about, mm-hmm. and I think this is overcompressed and doesn't make sense, but I actually kind of like it that way, is how little the Pyramid Corp, like that storyline doesn't need to be there, except for it's basically just going, yeah, MacGuffin-y MacGuffin thing that we got to get to it. And I think they do a good job of not putting it. They could have easily fucked up and spent five more minutes on that mm-hmm. and just slowed it to a crawl when it didn't matter that much. It was just...
Yeah, essentially all they did was remove a step because they find out that the people... Basically, all these people behind this thing all leads to Ozymandias. They find that out. Night Owl and Rorschach break into Ozymandias' office, not totally suspecting that he's behind this all, but looking for information, and they find out he's behind it all through shell companies like the Pyramid. In the movie, it's just Pyramid. In the comic, it's like, well, it's this, but it all leads to this, and then it leads to this. So they just took out a step. It's fine.
Yeah. It was actually kind of nice, and like, except for, and maybe you can make the argument that he's so smart that he doesn't care if anybody finds out, but having your password be something that you can see from the seat you're sitting in.
To be fair, this is the 80s.
I will not allow that. I will not allow that.
I don't know if did computers allow you to have like special character passwords? You know, I don't know.
It allowed you to have passwords that were not a book that was within eyesight of the keyboard on the computer.
Yeah.
And like, here's the thing: the password is Ramses II.
Mm-hmm.
That password could be Amenhotep, and that would be better.
Too many characters.
That's not on the side of the book.
Sorry, too many characters. You can't have that many characters.
Pyramid Rocks with an X.
Sorry, not allowed. Too many characters.
Wait, no, I think that's probably Ramses.
I don't know. I'm making up arbitrary rules. Yeah. Whatever. Yes, you have a point, but yeah, whatever.
Sphinx Boner 69. Yeah. Wait, the point is not having it on the thing. It's like when passwords are password.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the combination of my luggage.
Yeah. I don't like super smart people as the villain, because I feel like there's a certain amount of like, there's a little bit too much that you have to kind of take on faith.
Mm.
Where you're like, well, they're so smart. Where it's like, most of the time, like, you know, like the world's smartest man is like some bouncer in Weehawken in New Jersey. You ever see that story?
No.
It's this guy with like a 240 IQ. Like, he figured out like cold fusion while taking a shit, but like he works as a nightclub bouncer, doesn't feel like helping people because he's a dick. But it seems like this
happened. Are you sure this isn't the plot to Roadhouse too?
I'm not sure about that, but I'm pretty sure what I'm saying is somewhat true. It's not in New Jersey. I just think Weehawken, New Jersey is a funny place.
That's the problem in your story.
No, no, but like, it seems like really smart people either like turn weird, like that Zizek guy, like that philosopher where it's just like
ideology.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks, Dan Harmon.
Yep.
But like, you turn into like a shit heel, and like, none of them ever go, well, what I'm going to do is figure out cold fusion, predict it. Like, it doesn't, like, it, and there's something, like, that never works for me to have, like, and I think the Ozymandias thing, like, it always sits there of, like, there's always some level of, like, nah, that's not, well, and I just can't, it's just, and maybe it's my fault that I can't suspend disbelief to that level.
Well, I think on one hand, I would say that, like, this happened before that was seriously a trope, and starting with, there's other examples of this, but I think starting in with The Dark Knight and The Joker, it felt like there was just this spate of movies that like, I'm a villain and I'm five steps ahead of you at all times.
Yeah.
Like Loki in The Avengers or fucking Javier Bardem in Skyfall. Like all this stuff that's like, oh, this requires pinpoint timing for all this stuff to just happen, but I knew that was going to happen.
I adore the short stories, but this is Moriarty's fault.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's where that is the start of the, because he even says it, like Holmes says, this is my counterpart. He's as smart as me. Like mm-hmm. that started the ball rolling. He didn't know what he was getting into. I mean, fuck, the guy actually believed in fairies. He was half an idiot.
So but I will say that to Ozymandias' credit, he at least like, oh shit, I got to fix that. Like everything didn't just fall into place. Like, oh, you guys tried to find this out. Fuck. No, I had to go kill this guy to get you screwed up. Mm. You know, like there were flaws in his plan that he had to react to.
Oh, there's another thing that bothers me. That I wanted to bring up earlier. In the book,
mm-hmm.
there's no reason that he has a weirdo giant cat with big ears in this movie.
No, it's just awesome.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, only because that would be a plot point in the book because he's like a master geneticist and that leads towards the whole space.
Yeah, he just mentions like, yeah, this is a genetically modified lynx I have. I'm very smart.
I don't think he says it. I think it's just there in a scene.
No, and oh yeah, you know, I mean, that
I don't think he brings it up at all. It's just literally he's walking into a hallway with a big ass.
I got a big cat. Yeah, hanging out in Karnak.
You need to. Sorry, I'm thrown by. I was just about to go into a Johnny Carson Karnak routine, and I realized that I'm even too fucking young for this.
Yeah.
Like I know that as a reference that other people made. Yeah. I'm like, oh no, I can't do that. But
you need to make some Joan Severance jokes.
Yeah, you need to pay that off, and like you can't just have like, oh yeah, there's a big, because especially in this movie that is kind of a clusterfuck. You can't just have, because also that cost. What do you think that cost VFX wise? $1 million?
Oh, yeah, I have no idea. Probably. I'm gonna cost $35 million to change Sonic's face. So
yeah, worth it though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still left off the diaper, but whatever.
I don't know enough about the Sonic universe but
it's not about the Sonic universe. It's more about my universe with Sonic. It's fascinating that this being superheroes in the real world be terrible because superheroes are terrible was made by a guy who made among the worst superhero movies, who claimed in an earlier interview was like, oh, this is absolutely a satire on the whole superhero thing. And then took none of the lessons from that and then went on and just made superheroes be awesome and terrible.
Wait, he claimed Watchmen was a satire?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like that he got it, wink, wink. But then he made Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman.
Which one was Man of Steel?
Man of Steel was the dark Superman movie, the first one of those.
That was one with Zod.
With Michael Shannon as Zod. Where Superman kills
the
guy.
It was the second new Superman.
It wasn't the Brandon Routh Superman.
Not the one with Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah, the extra shitty one.
The slightly less pedophilia.
Better.
Extremely less, because Bryan Singer and Kevin Spacey, the 1-2 punch of pedophilia.
That's true, but the movie was far more watchable.
Sure, I saw it.
It's fine. I mean, it's not good.
It's got to be better than Man of Steel. Man of Steel is garbage.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You are correct. Yes.
But like this guy just does not get this movie. And I think there's no sure sign of that than him moving on to make these fundamentally god-awful films.
You are correct. Let me finish up with this thought, because it occurs to me that there's a plot beat in the TV show as well, which I won't go into. But his dad's a watchmaker in the movie The Watchmen.
Yeah. I mean, like,
no, I'm not gonna. I think
for the point of his character, I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, but in this movie,
mm-hmm.
which at no point did they address the who watches the Watchmen, which is the entire point of the comic book,
mm-hmm.
to have his dad be a Watchman. They gave up watchmaking when whatever the fuck.
Well, I don't think people that make watches are called watchmen.
No, I know, but you,
that's a different thing.
The fact that that's there is maddening to me.
Fair enough. I think it's fine.
But they don't address the who watches the Watchmen in this movie.
Right. Well, I think that's supposed to be the overall point. But yes, I agree but they don't.
But that's... So if you don't address the title of the fucking movie,
mm-hmm.
and then at one point you say, my dad makes watches, that's...
Well, I think there's also the whole dad makes watches things. I'm so tired of saying in the book. But in the book, like... He's taken apart watches, and his dad's like, fuck this, Einstein did nuclear bombs.
Yeah, they say
this
that
is
in
all,
the movie.
Yeah, this is all pointless. Throws it out the window, and it happens. That all happens during the scene where you're experiencing time all at once, like Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so the watch cogs falling through the air, frozen in the air, falling through the air, really works a lot better in that context versus, I think, the way they did it here.
Yes, because here... It has nothing to do with the overarching theme, which they didn't bother to bring up,
mm-hmm.
which is what bothers me.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered by his dad being a guy that makes watches mm-hmm. and giving it up when relativity is discovered. I am bothered by that being in this movie that didn't bother to talk about who watches the Watchmen, which is the fucking point of this.
I think someone spray paints it at the beginning before they blow it up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
but I guess that's after the movie where he's like, we are not talking about this. Kaboom.
Yeah. Ugh. Fucking edgelord bullshit. But so I say definitely watch this movie. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably my favorite movie that I've ever watched.
Read the book. There's so much. Every time I reread the book, there's something else I find in there that I really enjoy. Like, not just like in terms of the writing or something like that, but like this time there's so much of the artwork and the way the panels are laid out that I really enjoyed.
Like, it's
meant to be a comic book. It's not meant to be anything else.
Now, I wonder if someone that didn't read the book, because they show the newspaper stand a couple times, mm-hmm. and then that guy hugging a kid as the world explodes. It reminds me of in the Avengers, that one waitress you see a few times, and you know she's in cutscenes. Mm-hmm. I wonder if people watch this movie, see that guy, and they're like, why the fuck do they keep showing this one newspaper stand?
Yeah, it has this sort of like, oh, it feels like it should have some sort of emotional weight, but it doesn't.
It definitely doesn't. No, it's just kind of there. So
it's like Captain America catching Thor's hammer. It just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but it was really fun. I just rewatched that movie, and it is unfucking watchable on a second watch. But god damn, those couple scenes were like, that's awesome. He picked up the hammer.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean anything.
You know, I don't care about meaning anything. It's like a music video doesn't mean anything. It's fucking awesome. Yeah. Like, that dude just played a sweet guitar. Like, I don't care that it doesn't make sense. Like,
I also
it ruled.
I also really enjoy the idea of, because reading about the, like, Tom Holland talking about, like, they would be like, well, okay, do this in front of a green screen. What's this for? We can't tell you. That all these people that are walking through portals have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. I just rewatched that. And actually, there's some parts. It's the time heist section sucks, but like the opening of that movie is actually really fun, and the closing's really fun. That middle bit is just a fucking slog once you know what's mm-hmm. happening. It is. And there's a lot of bad jokes that just do not. And I know you don't like Whedon, but boy, that franchise really, really wants for someone that's good at writing dialogue.
Well, when you've, because he's already made all the characters the same, so you need someone to do that to be a Joss Whedon character.
I get your snark and I accept it, but now
because it's a Joss Whedon written thing.
But now the characters suck and are the same. At least it was everybody was good at talking. I get that they're not different from each other, but at least it's like, oh, cool, snappy dialogue for four people that sound the same. Now it's boring as dialogue for four people that sound the same.
But this is appropriate because since Thanos' plan is somewhat similar to Ozymandias's in terms of kill a bunch of people to make everything better.
Yeah. Though, Josh Brolin, a lot better than Ozymandias.
Yeah. And the fact that the fact you have to snap while wearing the gauntlet is funny to me.
I think about that. I wonder if that was just like Thanos's panache.
No, like and him it, doing it, but like, no, but Hulk.
No, but that's what I mean. But I wonder if everybody just kind of saw that and were like, oh, that's how that works. Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like when your car, where you're like, you know, if I go at my car when I try to start it, back when keys were a thing, that'll help. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, don't watch the Watchmen movie. It's a pile of fucking garbage. I'm glad you listened to this.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yes. Well, John, I think we need to take a little bit of break from superhero movies made by kind of edgelord directors. No, just kidding. Let's do Spawn by Todd McFarlane.
Yes. Actually, if we could just do the HBO series with just the openings from Todd McFarlane, that would be great.
Well, the HBO series was actually pretty good, but unfortunately we're going to do the 1997 version with John Leguizamo.
Michael Jai White.
Michael Jai White. Ooh, Michael Jai White is a wonderful actor.
Oh, yeah. Black Dynamite's fantastic.
He, and I don't remember his performance in the movie, but this is going to be fun. I think it's fun to go back and like see what superhero movies were before the modern trend of superhero movies. Because, I mean, if you think about it, like, to give this movie far more credit than it's going to get in 2 weeks, this was kind of the first kind of edgy, dark superhero. Maybe the first, but it's...
maybe Blade.
But it's in that run of trying to...
90s like, era
trying to figure out what happens in about 2007-ish, where, like, the modern superhero trend happens.
Yeah, and I think Venom tried to bring that back.
I don't think Venom tried anything. This is the equivalent of, well, I don't know, I just had a boater, I fell over, and your mom got pregnant. Like, it's like, this is...
oh,
this,
yes, that thing.
This is one of those, like, impossible sequences of events. That Venom is impossible. You can't explain it. It's just like... No, I sat on a toilet seat and I got herpes.
I got goop.
But actually, you literally sat on it. It's like, it's physically impossible, but somehow it happened, so therefore Venom. Spawn is of that ilk where I don't know why it happened. I don't know how it happened. I'm really looking forward to the CGI at the end of the film.
Yeah.
I remember it being, I mean, probably the best CGI ever.
It's so good. I'm assuming the only CGI you've ever seen is the first Mortal Kombat video game.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So then, it is jaw-dropping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, of course. That's the only thing that's ever.
Yeah.
That and like three frames of Tron are the only things I've ever seen.
That's yep.
In CGI. So I'm really looking forward to this.
It's gonna be good. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm excited.
Yeah. So inexplicably, we're watching 1997 Spawn. What the fuck are we doing?
Can I just watch a playthrough of the Super Nintendo game? I would much rather do that.
Yeah, but you also have to watch the movie.
Ah, damn it.
Yeah. All right, so Spawn, available everywhere for very little money because, I mean, it's Spawn.
Get Spawned.
I'm actually looking forward to this weirdly.
Yeah, it beats the Phantom.
I mean, maybe we should start like some kind of March Madness-esque bracket.
Oh, man, that would actually be fun. Yeah, yeah. If you can think of other like decidedly crummy superhero movies
Shadow,
that we should watch.
The Phantom. Spawn.
Yeah.
Steel.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't throw Roger Corman's Fantastic Four in there. Like, I wouldn't throw it out, but like that's such an outlier. That's Roger Corman. That's his own thing. But really just more, and that was also never released. So more mainstream. Maybe even like one of the new Fantastic Fours. That's supposed to be pretty bad.
Yeah, that second one's one of the worst things that's ever happened.
But if you can think of other crummy superheroes movies that we could watch, that might be a fun bracket thing to do.
Okay, yeah, we'll do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I write in where John and Alex Hate Stuff on Facebook or yeah, that's our only social media. Write in and tell us what our nowhere near March Madness brackets of shitty superhero movies.
December depressing superheroes. I don't know.
Oh, we could do fucking Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire, the one where he does like dancing when he's in the Venom suit.
Yeah, Superman 4, Quest for Peace. I mean, it's tough because I'd like, yeah, as a part of a franchise, I kind of like the standalone, like never got started. Superheroes.
Yeah.
But figure something out.
Write in three people that ever interact with us. John and Alex Hate Stuff on Facebook. All right. Bye.
Bye.